Welcome to the Karen Conti Show on 720 WGN.
Good evening, everyone. Karen Conti here. Thank you for tuning in and spending your Sunday with me while you ready yourself for a long week ahead with snow. Did I hear that right? Snow?
Yeah, just a little bit overnight, and it's not going to amount to anything.
But isn't it supposed to get warmer toward the end of the week? Is that right?
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, 50s and possible 60s.
We're going to hold you to that, Roger.
I'll be in hiding.
That's a binding oral agreement.
Wait a minute. I didn't agree to anything.
Roger, you know, I wanted to say something on air, and I hope you don't mind me saying this. I know that your dog died. Rufus, you're the best dog in the whole world, according to Facebook. That's really hard to have an animal die. I'm sure everyone listening has had that happen. A cat or a dog, I don't care what animal it is. It's just really heartbreaking. And it's not like you get a lot of sympathy as if your mother died or a spouse died, but it really can be devastating. Or how are you doing?
We're doing okay. There are times at home, like today, as I was getting ready to come to work, I looked down on the carpet in the front room expecting to see him and to tell him that, you know, I'll be back later on because my wife was out for the day also. And it's going to take a while, but everybody who's gone through this understands it. I think it's, you mentioned pets in general, but I think it's more meaningful when you have a dog or a cat because those are so personal. I know some people have, like, you know, mice or turtles that they sit and talk with and stuff.
Sure, but they don't have the personality, really.
Let's be
serious about that. Reptiles just don't do it.
Yeah.
No.
But it'll take a while, and I can't thank our listeners enough and the wonderful staff here at WGN and my friends on Facebook and Twitter. It'll take a while, but this too shall pass, and, you know, things go on, but I appreciate everything and all the sentiments from everyone. I really, really do.
Our thoughts go out to you, Roger.
Thank you so much.
Well, listen, we're going to have a kind of a potpourri of a show today. As many of you know, I'm a practicing lawyer. I've been doing it for about 30 years. And we usually do some legal topics and take some legal calls. But the first hour, we're going to do a few different things. In our first segment, we have the chief of police of Buffalo Grove talking about alcohol awareness. And it's some interesting study that just came down about children and underage drinking that you're going to want to hear because it's very, very interesting and some things that you probably don't know. We're also going to talk to him about what it's like to be a chief of police in a suburban district and what it's like to be chief of police in various places in Illinois, as our guest Steve Stevens has been. Then we're going to be talking, it's National Zoo Lovers Day. Who knew, right? We're going to be talking to Andre Copeland, who is with the Brookfield Zoo, and we're going to find out what is going on at the zoo, what's happening there. There's all kinds of interesting things, and we're going to talk about why you should go to Brookfield Zoo sometime soon when the weather gets nice. Then we're going to talk a little bit about, and again, we're not getting political here, but this week, the special counsel Mueller supposedly said, and it was leaked, that Donald Trump, our president, is not a target. And a lot of people have been asking me, what is a target? What does that mean? And what is a witness? And what is a subject? Those words are being used in many investigations that you read about. And I'm going to have a very prominent criminal defense lawyer, Damon Sharonis, on to talk a little bit about the nature of an investigation, how is it conducted, what is secret and what is not secret, what does it mean to be a target, and what does it mean to be a subject? And we're going to be talking to him about those topics. And then at the top of the hour, as usual, 8 o'clock, I'll be taking your legal questions on any topic that you might have. I'll give it a shot, either try to answer your question or point you in the right direction. I'll give you those numbers now so you can plug them into your phone, 312-981-7200, and text to that same number, 312-981-7200. And before we take a break, I always give a little bit of this day in legal history. If you're a Facebook friend of mine or on LinkedIn with me, I do it every day. And it's interesting sometimes to run down the history of what has gone on in Illinois. And this week in legal history, tomorrow, as a matter of fact, in 1973, Otto Kerner, a former governor of Illinois, was convicted for his role in an illegal racetrack scheme. Apparently, what was alleged was that he was granted certain stock options by the person who was managing Arlington Racetrack in exchange for getting good dates from the government. Good dates meaning good racing dates. The case went to trial. The prosecutor was later Illinois Governor James Thompson, for whom the Thompson Center is named. And Kerner was found guilty and sentenced to 3 years in prison. He was released early due to some medical issues, and he was the first of four Illinois governors to be convicted on federal criminal charges. What's interesting about Otto Kerner is that he was a very interesting guy. He was a very educated person. He went to law school at Northwestern. He was married to Helena Cermak, who was the daughter of the late Anton Cermak, who had been mayor of Chicago before he was shot and killed on an attempt, was probably an attempt on Franklin Roosevelt's life. So he was in the Army, and he was a bronze medal winner, and a lot of people didn't think that he was guilty of what he was charged. And now it turns out that the law that put him away, which is known as the Honest Services Law, has really been found largely to be unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. So it would be interesting if he were to be retried today, because I'm not sure that he'd be found guilty. Anyway, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking with the Chief of Police of Buffalo Grove, Steve Kastevens. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show on WGN. April is Alcohol Responsibility Month. Did you know that? And there has been a new report released by responsibility.org about underage drinking and how parents handle it, among other things. And with us tonight to discuss this issue is Stephen Kastevens, the Chief of Police of Buffalo Grove. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You are the former president of the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police, and you are currently the vice president of the International Chiefs of Police. So you're very involved in your profession. Tell us about this study that came out and what it shows regarding parents and their kids and alcohol.
Sure. Well, the responsibility.org has a program called Ask, Listen, and Learn. And they recently released a report for Alcohol Responsibility Month. And the report looks at how and when parents talk to their kids about underage drinking. And so the report surveyed 1,000 parents of kids ages 10 to 17. And while it showed that a majority of the parents talk to their kids about alcohol consumption, a lot of them may really be missing one of the most important points to tell their kids why they shouldn't be drinking alcohol. And that important point is the impact on their brains. Because at that age group, their brains are still developing. So our brains, being the most powerful organ in the human body, still developing. Our brain controls what we do, how we learn, decision-making. And exposing the brain to alcohol at those ages can interrupt development and can lead to all sorts of alcohol disorders and cognitive dysfunction and impairments.
Very interesting, because I would assume that what a lot of parents talk to their children about is don't drink because you're going to get in the car, you're going to do something silly, and you're going to break the law, you're going to get pregnant, you're going to do something that you don't want to do. But the parents are just not talking to them about the real impact from a physiological standpoint, which is very interesting.
Very much so. And that can have long-term devastating effects on the brain in the later years.
Is it still the case, is it not, Steve, that children, the biggest substance that is abused by children, the most frequent substance that is abused is alcohol?
It actually is, very
okay.
much so.
And what else did the study say? Did it talk a little bit about whether children are using alcohol more or less frequently than in the past?
Well, actually, that was one of the nice parts that I read about mm-hmm. the study, is it has shown that over the past several years, abuse of alcohol by teens has actually gone down. And that's something that I'm pleased to hear in law enforcement. And a lot of that is because both law enforcement has made a concerted effort to get this message out, and we've made a concerted effort to talk to parents about getting that message out to their kids. Part of the research showed that when conversations between parents and kids about alcohol goes up, underage drinking rates go down. And that's exactly what we're looking for.
That makes sense, right?
It's really that simple.
One of the things, and I'm not sure I'm just going to paraphrase what was in the report, but it talked about how if you ask parents, what is the biggest factor in whether your child will drink while the child is in high school? And the parents largely said, well, teen influence, peer influence is very, very important. But as it turns out, according to the study, what their parents say about it is much more important to the teens than what their peers say and do.
Absolutely.
That surprised me.
Just when you think your kids aren't listening
to you. That's right. That's right.
The report actually showed that almost 70% of the 10 to 18-year-olds say that their parents are the leading influence in their decision about drinking alcohol.
And that just gives the message to everyone out there loud and clear. You have to talk to them about it. And to add to the talk, this detail about the permanent impact alcohol could have on a brain.
And it's, you know, as parents, throughout the years, we have so many difficult conversations with our kids. This is actually a slam dunk. This is a no-brainer. This is an easy conversation to have.
Now, are you a parent?
I am.
Okay. And what... Tell me if you, knowing what you know about this report, being chief of police of Buffalo Grove and being a parent, at what point do you first sit down with your child and what do you say to him?
You can never start at too early an age. A lot of parents think, well, I need to wait. You know, I'll have that conversation when my kids get into high school. It's too late to have that conversation. You need to have that conversation 10, 11, 12 years old. That's when, believe it or not, some of the peer pressure and some of the curiosity about alcohol starts. And so that's really the key ages to start, 10, 11, 12. Have that conversation and don't make the conversation more difficult than it has to be.
Right.
It's really a simple conversation. You need to understand the effects that alcohol have on you. Bad things can happen. It can do bad things to your brain. And I really, as your parent who loves you, I want you to stay away from alcohol.
And again, this is a little bit maybe off your area of expertise, but again, as a parent, your child comes home, and I've got plenty of parents who I represent in family law matters who tell me, my child came home and I smelled alcohol, or I found alcohol in the bedroom, or whatever. What do you do when that happens? Again, I suppose there's a conversation that you have, but do you have any tips for parents about how to punish children or to guide them once they've gone there?
Great question. And you're right. It starts with a conversation. And it starts with the sit down, put everything else aside, face to face, look me in the eye. We're having this difficult conversation. When it comes to punishment, as you say, first thing I do is take away their cell phone.
Of course. Of course. That's the worst thing you can do to a kid.
Of course.
I mean, that is the absolute worst. Now, we were like, no television or no chocolate or no whatever. But yeah, though, that is a big punishment.
Oh, absolutely. When I do something bad, my wife takes my cell phone away. It's a very difficult time.
That's very, very, very abusive. But so let's anything else in this report that you think is important for parents to know about the influence they have on their children and drugs, alcohol, and those types of things?
Well, there's a couple of things. You know, we related to this earlier, but when parents talk to their kids about alcohol, typically they talk about things like, oh, you could get in a car crash. If you drank too much, there could be alcohol poisoning. You could be injured. You could fall down the stairs. All sorts of bad things can happen. And those are all true. But again, let's not forget the important one is the effect on the brain. That damage can last for a lifetime.
And interestingly, they were asking parents, like, what do you do to keep your kid healthy? Oh, we give them good food. We make sure they sleep. We make sure they don't smoke. But they largely miss that piece of it, which is interesting that they don't even think of that as being a health factor as opposed to something else.
Right. And we all need to remember that your kids are going to model your behavior. And as much as we try as parents to model good behavior in so many other ways, let's not forget that our kids are going to be watching us and they're going to watch how we treat alcohol. So that's a message that you can send as well.
Absolutely. Now a little bit off the topic. Steve, you have been a chief of police in Peru and Mendota and Cary, and now you're in Buffalo Grove. And I have to ask you, are there buffalo in Buffalo Grove?
There are no buffalo in Buffalo Grove, and I'm not even sure if there's a grove in Buffalo Grove anymore.
I just had to ask that because I do remember as a kid, I think I remember, unless I'm hallucinating, that memory of driving by somewhere and seeing some buffalo. But I don't know. Well, we'll have to figure that out. So being a chief of police in these different communities, which are very different, Peru is kind of central Illinois, I guess I would call it that, or western Illinois. How does your job vary from community to community?
Well, so I started my career in the military police originally. Then I worked as a police officer from Mendota and a police officer in Peru. And then I was hired in Hoffman Estates, where I worked for their police department for 30 years. I retired there as a deputy police chief. Then I took over a job as police chief in Cary, Illinois, for about 2.5 years before I moved to Buffalo Grove as police chief about 5 years ago. And you're absolutely right. Every one of those communities are completely different. And as a police chief, your job is completely different depending on what community you work for. Peru is a very small community compared to the other communities in our state, as is Mendota. Mendota, I think when I worked there, had 12 to 15 officers. Peru was about 20-some officers. Hoffman Estates, when I worked there, had about 105 sworn officers. So completely different agencies. But as a police chief, your job is completely different, though at the end of the day, you're still responsible for every decision that every one of those officers make.
That's right. That's right. We're going to have to break, but just this is a 10-second question. We have tension between police and certain members of the community. In a very quick answer, what do you think is the solution to curing that problem that we're seeing?
Police-community interaction. It's really that simple. Every single law enforcement officer of every agency needs to spend as much of their duty hours interacting with the residents of their community and developing a great relationship.
Thank you so much for joining us. Steve Castevens, the Chief of Police of Buffalo Grove. Talk to your kids about alcohol.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining me. You're listening to The Karen Conti Show on WGN.
If I could talk to the animals, just imagine it, chatting with a chimp and chimpanzee. Imagine talking.
Well, today is National Zoo Lovers Day, and we are lucky to be in the city of Chicago because we have not only one great zoo in Chicago, but a fabulous zoo in the Collar County of Brookfield, and that is Brookfield Zoo. And we're going to now talk about our beloved Brookfield Zoo with the interpretive programs manager, Andre Copeland. Hi, Andre.
How are you, Karen?
Thank you for joining us. I'm really excited that it's National Zoo Lovers Day. Did you know this before I called you to do this?
You know, I actually did, but it was something that I did not remember, and I have to admit, Sundays belong to my granddaughter. It's my first grandchild, so when Sundays come around, I tend to be focused on her and Teletubbies and called me and I said, okay, National Zoo Day. That's right.
That's right. Well, I'm happy that you're here to celebrate it. Tell me, Brookfield Zoo, without going into a really long history, what about the history is interesting and what about the zoo from a historic standpoint is unique from other zoos in the world?
Well, what's unique about the history of Brookfield Zoo is Edith Rockefeller McCormick. Miss McCormick in 1913 had a chance to visit Europe, and that's Zurich specifically, and she was really impressed with the modern zoos that she saw there at the time. And their philosophies, as well as their techniques, were making sure that the public and the animals were safe from one another. So in 1919, she donated 83 acres of land to the Forest Preserves of Cook County for the express purpose of building that type of modern zoo. So today we have a 216-acre zoological park that has made some evolutions from then until now. So what the historic evolutions have been is that we have gone from an organization that wanted to help create awareness about the beautiful biodiversity of life on this planet to an organization now that helps people realize that sustainability is very important, and they can take part in helping make wildlife and nature thrive by making sure that they take steps that are going to better their lives as well.
Now, Andre, I grew up about, I want to say, 2 or 3 miles from Brookfield Zoo. So when we went, we would walk half the time. And we spent a lot of beautiful summer days there. And I have great memories of Olga the walrus, who was a character, and some of the other animals. But tell me, if you go to the zoo, if your average person, the average family goes to the zoo, and you have, say, 3 hours to spend, what would you do there?
Well, what I would advise people to do is to make sure they wear comfortable shoes, first of all, and take a look at our website, because we have about 3,000 animals that live at the zoo. And so they want to make sure they have an idea of what animals they want to see. Some of the highlights of the trip to the zoo would be, for example, visiting the big cats. Our new exhibit, Wild Encounters, is a highlight for adults as well as children. In the Wild Encounters area, people can visit the aviary, and in the aviary we have parakeets. The specific types are the budgies, and you can buy a feed stick, hold the feed stick, and the budgies will actually come and land on the feed stick, so you can get that up-close personal interaction with those beautiful birds. But there's also an area where you can walk in and walk along a trail with wallabies and emus, and then, of course, our goats. People love to go in, feed the goats, pet the goats, so it's one of the most hands-on experiences there. But there are a lot of other things for people to do. For example, Tropic World. It's one of the first immersive exhibits of its kind, where people can go in and go through 3 different biomes. They can travel from South America to Asia to Africa and see the glorious primates that live in each area of the world. But then also, like I had said before, they can find out some specific steps they can take in their daily life to make their lives better, but then also help animals that are half a world away.
Andre, what are some of the new exhibits? I've been hearing about a monarch butterfly exhibit, and tell me why we should be interested in the monarch butterflies.
Oh, I'm glad that you asked about the monarch butterfly. We have a seasonal butterfly exhibit that's extremely popular every year. And this year, we're going to be telling the story of the monarch butterfly. The monarch butterfly is one of those animals that is inspired cultural art, it has inspired literature, but people connect very closely with the monarch butterfly because it helps us understand a bit about migration. These animals take a trip from Mexico, and they have pathways that come straight through Illinois, and they travel almost all the way up to the Canadian border and then back to Mexico again. What makes it very unique is the adults that start this journey are not the ones that come back to Mexico. It would be the equivalent of me starting off that journey and then my great-great-grandchild being the one to make it back to the place of origin.
So it's kind of like it's kind of like a generational spring break.
It definitely is. And the cool thing about this is that people have a chance to help mother monarchs feed their young. You see, mother monarchs will only lay their eggs on milkweed. It's the only type of nourishment that their caterpillars will eat. And what has started to happen through the past decade or so is that milkweed has started to become less and less prevalent in their migratory pathways. And those are due to things such as restrictions, depending upon what your housing requirements are, also in agricultural lands because of the abundance of superweeds and the use of glyphosate to combat these superweeds, the milkweed population has started to decrease.
Andre, we only have a few minutes left, but I want to just know what the current cost is for Brookfield Zoo for those people who are thinking of going.
Well, people who want to come to Brookfield Zoo can definitely come and It's not a very expensive cost compared to some of the attractions that they would see in the Chicagoland area. For example, when people come to Brookfield Zoo, they will find out that general admission for adults is $21.95, for seniors it's $15.95, and children 3 to 11, it's $15.95. Parking is $14, and if you have a bus, bus parking is $20.
Andre, we have to run now, but I really appreciate you joining us for National Zoo Lovers Day, and I hope everyone gets out this year and goes to Brookfield Zoo, one of the treasures in the Chicagoland area. Thank you for joining us, Andre.
Well, thank you so much, and appreciate you having me.
All right, take care. You're listening to The Karen Conti Show on WGN. Welcome back to the Karen Conti Show. After 8 o'clock, I will be taking your legal questions and legal calls. So if you have any questions about family law or criminal law or breach of contract or anything that you have on your mind, please give me a call. I'm here at 312-981-7200. Text to 312-981-7200. And if you want to talk to me personally instead of on the air, I'm always available to talk during the week, 312-332-7800, or better yet, email me at wgn@askkarenconti.com. This week it was reported that Special Counsel Mueller does not consider President Trump to be a target in the investigation, but a subject. And we don't know if this is actually what happened, if this was a leak or if this was really true. But, and I don't want to talk about guilt or innocence. I don't want to talk about politics because I really want to stay away from that. But I really would like to talk about what it means to be a target and how an investigation is conducted. Here to talk about that with me is Damon Sharonis, who's one of the premier criminal defense lawyers in the city. Damon, welcome to the Karen Conti Show.
Hi, Karen. Thanks for having me.
You've been on the show numerous times. Damon has been involved in many high-profile cases, the mob secrets trials. You represented Rod Blagojevich, one of the lawyers in that case, and you've done a lot of high-profile federal criminal defense cases. So what does it mean to be a target of an FBI investigation?
So, you know, there's three places you can usually fall into. The target is what it sounds like. A target means the government thinks that there is substantial evidence linking you to a crime. And certainly of the three places you can be, that's the last place you want to be because you're a putative defendant in a criminal case. And you can expect there's a good possibility at some point you're going to be indicted by a grand jury.
Okay.
And then there's a witness, right? And that's the best place to be because a witness is somebody who, for lack of a better example, is standing on a corner and sees a car go through a red light. He wasn't driving. He had nothing to do with it. He just saw it, and he can give information about that. And then there's a subject.
And what is the subject?
Subject, I find in my practice that the subject is kind of the hardest person to represent. Because if somebody comes in your office and they're a target, well, you know that there's a target on their back, and you know sort of the moves you need to make. If it's a witness, it's similar. But a subject is somebody who the government hasn't really decided whether or not they're a target or just a witness. So their activity is within the scope of the investigation. And, you know, when somebody comes into my office, my job is hopefully to convince the government that the client is not a target, but a witness. So a subject is still potentially a dangerous place to be because you certainly have not been given an all clear from the government that you're not going to be implicated in criminal activity.
So does the government have to be honest with you if you call them up and say, hey, is my guy a target? Can they lie and say no and they really are a target?
I think that's unlikely. You know, for what I'll do, and recently I had a case, obviously I can't talk about the specifics, but I would call up the government and ask for a non-target letter.
So, and what does that mean?
So what that is you can call up a prosecutor and say, look, the first question I have when somebody comes into my office and they're part of an investigation, if I can get in touch with the U.S. attorney, is you want to find out what the client's status is. And they won't always tell you, but you can say, look, if my client's a target, I kind of need to know. And if my client's not a target, I want a non-target letter. And what that is essentially a letter saying, at this point, the government does not have sufficient information to determine or believe that your client is involved in criminal activity. So it's essentially, for this moment, we do not have a target on their back. But the problem is, that can change. as the investigation evolves, somebody can go from a non-target to a target as more information is brought to the surface or as the FBI continues their investigation. So a non-target letter is nice to have, but it's certainly not, you know, immunity, or it's not a forever pass that your client will never be implicated.
We're talking to Damon Sharonis, criminal defense lawyer in Chicago, about investigations and witnesses. Now, I want to talk a little bit about how an investigation works. We're kind of getting a little bit of what's going on with the Robert Mueller investigation, bits and pieces, but is it normally public knowledge what the FBI is doing as far as an investigation?
No. I mean, by the very nature of the types of criminal activity or alleged criminal activity that they're investigating, it can't be done out in the open. It can't be done for everybody to see. I mean, this is a little different because it's such a public thing that's going on, but the majority of investigations, you know, the target of an investigation may not even know he was a target until he's indicted. Now, that's not always the case. Sometimes the government sends out target letters to targets, but this is not supposed to be an open book necessarily. The government can act in secrecy. Grand jury proceedings are secret by nature. They're not supposed to be done in public. Defendants don't have the right to present their own evidence there. So no, it's not an open book when there's an investigation going on. And it shouldn't be.
Right. So how does this work? We all hear that the government will investigate and then they'll find some people who may have done some things wrong. And then they're kind of on the bottom of the food chain. And then they use those people to testify against the people who are higher up and may have done more serious things. Is that generally how it works?
That's the lifeblood of a lot of criminal prosecutions. And the theory behind that is they want to go after everybody who's involved, but they want to go after the most culpable people or the most guilty people or the people who've affected society the greatest. And in order to do that, the best way to do that is to get somebody who is involved in that criminal activity to cooperate, a co-conspirator, somebody who has inside knowledge of what the real bad guy has done. So the government has a whole slew of things they can offer these low-level, and not always low-level. I mean, if you look at just thinking off the top of my head, you know, the John Gotti case, Sammy Gravano killed 19 people, and he got a deal where he had to do a couple years in jail. The family secrets trial, Nick Calabrese, who was the main government's witness, killed 15 people, and he got a deal where he did 12 years. So, you know, it doesn't have to be low-level people, but in order to get the bigger fish, the government oftentimes has to offer things that they don't want to offer. You know, the government doesn't want to give murderers a pass or 10 years, but in order to get what they believe is sort of the higher justice, they have to offer things to low-level individuals or other people who are going to go after the big fish.
A lot of people have said that Mueller is outside the scope of what his focus should have been, and he's got these people, Manafort, who have been indicted, but not for anything really relating to the Russian election, nothing to do with Donald Trump, but having to do with committing crimes, allegedly, that violated financial laws and tax laws. So What is the limit on what an FBI investigator can charge?
Well, normally there is no limit, right? Normally investigations are just a regular investigation. I think you will hear almost every FBI agent you talk to or every prosecutor say, we go where the evidence takes us. In this case, it's a little bit different because there's a mandate specifically for a special prosecution, which is supposed to have the parameters of what the special prosecutor is supposed to look for. But, you know, there's been a motion to dismiss filed from Manafort regarding that. The problem is that's not like a constitutional right that's being attacked. It's in Department of Justice policy where they're saying, look, this is supposed to be the parameters. But from what I've read, the parameters are pretty large in this case. They're saying not only the Russian collusion, but other things that are related to it. So I think it's a complete losing argument for, you know, these people who have been charged to say the Department of Justice has gone over their mandate because it's an internal policy within the Department of Justice.
Now, again, without getting political and without, you know, making...
There's nothing political about this case,
no.
Karen, is there? It's just...
No, not at all.
No, not at all.
But what, just from a criminal defense lawyer standpoint, and you've been through these cases, not these meaning the Russian influence and election cases.
Although the way things are going, I may get a call soon, right?
You might. You never know. But what do you glean from all this? Where is this investigation going? Do you have any ideas or gut feelings? And obviously, we're speculating because all of this is confidential except for the indictments that are coming down.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? That's the real answer. I mean, I don't even want to speculate. I mean, there's been so much. I mean, you Google this and there's a million different theories as to what's going to happen. I think that, you know, the prosecutor's mandate, he's going to follow it. Obviously, Mr. Mueller is a very well-trained, and I think he's got a lot of integrity, and I think he's going to go where the evidence takes him. Where that leads, I mean, who knows?
You know, Damon, I hear that, you know, the FBI is political and Mueller's political. And my feeling, having practiced a little bit in the criminal area back in the day, that they really aren't very political. And the U.S. Attorney's Office, really, they go after Democrats and Republicans in the political corruption arena every single day of the week.
Well, I think especially the special prosecutor in this case is known for being apolitical. He really is. I mean, I think he was appointed initially with Bush, and then Obama kept him on
yes.
for 2 years. Everybody who talks about him says this is not a person who talks politics. At the end of the day, everybody probably has their political leanings, but you hope that what they're doing is following the evidence. And if a Democrat commits a crime, they're going to prosecute him. If it's a Republican, they're going to prosecute him. If it's a libertarian, whatever, you know, follow the evidence. And I think that it's easy for people who have political bents to say this is a witch hunt. But at the end of the day, if there's evidence showing that somebody broke the law, I don't think the FBI is going to charge or not charge them based on their political position or their political party.
Damon, we only have a minute left, but you're telling me before you walked in that you're working on an interesting case. Can you quickly tell us what happened in that case?
I can't.
You can't?
No.
The were you?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm working on a client who was wrongfully convicted for a murder that he did not commit. He was released and exonerated and received a certificate of innocence.
How long did he serve?
30 years.
30 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was just a horrible story. A great man who went through a lot. And now he's out and reconnected with his family. And there's a civil suit that's pending. But we're working very hard for him. And it's a great story that maybe someday we can talk about more in detail.
I would like to do that. Yeah. I really would. Damon, if someone were to want to talk to you about a criminal matter, what is your contact information?
You know, my website's an easy place to find me. It's www.sharonislaw.com. And my phone number, 312-663-4644. Or the bat sign, I usually say as a joke. But I'm easy to find.
Damon, thank you so much for joining us. Damon Sharonis, one of the best criminal defense lawyers here in the city. And now we're going to be taking your legal calls after the news. I'm going to give out the numbers here, 312-981-7200. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show. I'm a practicing lawyer, and now is the time to call in with legal questions that you might have. Have you heard something on the news that you have a question about? Are you in the middle of a divorce and you have some questions? Do you have a small claim? Someone owe you money? What is your legal problem? Give me a call here. I will do my best to answer your question and give you some guidance in the right direction. Our number is 312-981-7200, 981-7200. And while the calls are coming in, I'm going to talk about some of the questions that I got this week. I had a bunch of questions that came in through my email address, which, by the way, is wgn@askkarenconti.com. I'm going to paraphrase this. I had a gentleman email me and say that a delivery service came to his home and tracked in feces all over his carpet. What recourse does he have, and shall I hire a lawyer? And so there were some more details, but I don't want to get too specific, especially on a nice Sunday night. But I said to him, listen, you know, it sounds awful. It sounds like a horrible thing that happened to you, but it's not really something that is worth bringing a lawsuit. And in conjunction with that, I talk all the time about what is worth it to bring a lawsuit and why is it not worth it for a lawyer to bring a lawsuit? Well, one of the things that you need to know is that filing a lawsuit costs money out of your pocket to actually file it. Sometimes it's $300, $400, and then you have to serve by sheriff, so that might be another $100 or so. So right away, there is just $500 out of your pocket, right? So lawyers get paid a lot of money. Unfortunately for the public, I think it's not, lawyers are not as accessible as most people think. People think that you can afford a lawyer, and it's very difficult to afford a lawyer. But a lawyer that takes a case on a contingent basis, meaning they take the case and then if there's a settlement or a verdict, the lawyer pays you your money and takes out his fee. That would be the kind of case this gentleman is talking about. But listen, if you're going to spend all this money and you're spend all this time and your attorney's fees could be in the area of $50,000, what are the damages? And when I say damages, I mean, what is the harm that was caused? Yes, feces on a carpet, not a good thing. But when you clean it and you pay a company to come in and clean it, how much does that cost? $200 maybe? Even if you replace the carpet altogether, and that cost $2,000, it's not worth bringing a lawsuit over that small amount of money. Just not. And so what do you do? You should call the company and tell them what happened and take pictures of it and send them the bill of your cleaning cost and say, listen, you guys should pay for this because you should not have people walking around with feces. So, you know, that's your recourse. It's not to hire a law firm and bring that lawsuit. Let's go to the phone lines. Valerie, welcome to the Karen Conti Show. How are you?
Hi, I'm very good. Thank you. My question is this. My daughter lives in Indiana, but is using my car, my title, my insurance in Illinois, and she was in a car accident, and my insurance company says they will not pay for the claim.
Did they
tell my course or what? How does that happen?
Did they tell you why they're not paying the claim?
This just happened like over the weekend, and I haven't been able to call personally myself to the office on Monday. But
okay.
I want to have as much information as I can before I start talking to somebody.
Well, I think one of the first things you should do is talk to your insurance agent. And obviously, your agent is the one who you give the premiums to, and the claim department is not connected with the person who takes your premiums. However, the agent should know what's covered and what's not covered. And if the agent told you that your daughter could be covered, even though she doesn't live in Illinois, she can still be covered on your insurance, then you're going to want to know if that's the case. And did that insurance agent misrepresent something to you or misunderstand something? Because one of the things that might be at issue here is if you have somebody on your insurance, it could be, and I don't know the answer to this, to be honest with you, Valerie, I don't.
Okay.
I could find this out probably very quickly, but I don't know. Can you have somebody on your insurance who doesn't live in your home and who doesn't live in your state? And my guess is going to be that that's the reason they're not covering it, because the laws are different in different states, and there's probably a different risk if someone's living in Illinois versus different risk living in another state, and they didn't sign up for that one. So I'd say first go to your insurance agent and see if you can get some information, and then talk to the claims department, find out what the reason is that they denied the claim, and have them put it in writing. And then you might want to consult with an attorney if it's worth enough money to look at the policy, read the policy, and figure out if they're actually right about that and if you have a right to dispute the denial of that insurance claim. And then there's some procedures usually in disputing that within the insurance agency. I'm sorry, the insurance company, rather.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
I'll start with my agent and go from there. I just felt like if my car is insured, I mean, because you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I guess you know what I mean. I drive to Wisconsin, I get in an accident. Well, my car is insured. That's what I'm trying to get fixed.
No, I get it. But I think if they're right about this, it's because she's not living with you. But and if you can't get an answer, email me and I'll see if I can get you a quick answer. I have some lawyers that office with me who do a lot of personal injury work. So they're going to probably know the answer to that question off the top of their heads. OK, so I'm going to say goodbye and I'm going to give out my information. Thank you for the call, Valerie. 312-332-7800, or better yet, email me at wgn@askkarenconti.com. I'm going to take a break, but the phone lines are wide open. Give us a call here, 312-981-7200. Yes, this is the time to call in and ask me some legal questions. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Oren. Oren, welcome to WGN. How are you tonight?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. I enjoy your program immensely.
Thank you.
And I do have a question that you may be able to help with.
Okay.
I have a cell phone problem, and I purchased a cell phone at a store, and several things happened there that caused me to look askance at my experience. And I then went to the, just happened to see for the first time, this was a Sprint phone, if that's all right to mention, or a Sprint company-handled phone. And I went to that company's office yesterday and spoke to several of them, and I continue to be nervous about the responses that I'm getting. And I thought I'd run it by you and see if I was right or if it's an issue that I should ignore at my peril, but be willing to pay for, in that I've gotten into it far enough that it may be a situation where they can charge me for the time spent so far on their part.
Okay, Oren, so here's, I obviously can't give you any specific advice because I don't know all the issues. And even if you told me the issues, I would probably tell you to do this. I would take all of the documentation that you got from the company and read it. I know that's painful because some of it is small print and some of it is hard to understand. Even if a lawyer reads it, as a lawyer has trouble reading it and following it. But know exactly, especially right in the area of whatever your issue is, and see what it says. What does it provide about? Does it promise something that the phone is not doing? Are you being charged for something that you're not supposed to be charged for? Whatever it is, see if you can lay your hands on the exact wording from that contract. Because generally, when it comes to consumer issues like this, you really need to start with the contract. And it is a contract. You buy something and they tell you what they're giving you. And they usually do that in writing, in a little manual and all that stuff you get that you usually just throw in the kitchen drawer and don't look at. But now you're going to look at it and you're going to see if it helps you to make your claim that they're not living up to their side of the picture, if that's what you're if that's what you're saying to me. And if that's the case, or even if it's not the case, what I generally tell people to do is put it in writing. Going in and or calling on the phone, you're not going to get the right person, but there should be a consumer place where you can email things, and I would put those things in writing and say, this is what's happening, this is what's not being provided, and tell them what you want. I want my money back. I want a refund. I want a new phone. I want someone to explain to me why you're charging me for this, but I didn't know that you were going to charge me for that. So again, read the contract and then put your complaint in writing so you can demand a response from them. Does that help?
It does help a little bit. If I could quickly ask, if I only found out the contents of the contract that you're speaking about, a 10-page document, after I got home, I was given no intimation at the store that I should read the contract first and then sign it. I was just given the contract to sign, and when I got home, I actually pulled it out of the box and read it, and my goodness, there are just dozens of questions in there that I have, which I was not privy to at the time I got the phone, and the store people did not tell me, as they are instructed in this contract, to read the contract before you sign this contract.
Okay, Oren, I'm going to put you on hold, and I'm going to finish up my answer, but thank you for the call. Again, the law of contracts is that if you sign something, you have presumed to have read it and understood it. And anything that was said to you by the people in the store, really, I hate to say this because it sounds like it doesn't make sense, but what they say doesn't matter. What's in the written document matters. So if they didn't tell you something, you don't really have a legal right to say they did something wrong because they omitted something. Even if they said something orally to you that was actually false, you still probably wouldn't have a lawsuit against them. Again, we're talking about a phone, and I don't know how much it's worth, but it can't be more than a couple $1,000s at the very most, right? So a lawsuit is probably not the avenue here because, again, as I said in my last segment, bringing a lawsuit is expensive, and hiring a lawyer is just not cost effective. I don't care how long you litigating over that much money doesn't make any sense. So you're going to have to resolve it yourself, and you're going to have to resolve it through whatever dispute processes that they have. And your best bet is to be nice to them and to say, "I'm very disappointed. I liked your phone. I liked working with you, and I'm very disappointed. These people didn't tell me. I want my money back. I want a different phone," whatever it is. And so hopefully you can resolve it that way rather than taking it the legal route. But please give us a call here. We have phone lines open, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. I am going to, this was a call that I got this week. A woman called and said she was injured at her job when a piece of construction material flew into her eye. She was told that she could not file a workers' compensation claim because the rule said that she was supposed to wear a construction, like a mask that protected her eyes, and she didn't. She didn't wear it as she was told she had to. And she asked me the question, does Illinois have a rule that if you don't follow a employer's mandate, that you have no right to file a workers' compensation claim? Well, interestingly, in Illinois, we have no such rule. So if an employer says, "We have rules, you have to wear a safety mask, you can't walk on this side of the line," and let's say, I'm not encouraging you to do that, but let's say that you violate those rules, and let's say that the employer warned you, you can't do that. You can't do the construction without the mask. Even if you violate it, you get injured, you still have a right to bring a workers' compensation claim. In some states, that's not the case, but Illinois has a fairly liberal workers' compensation law. And people ask, well, why would you be able to file a suit if you were violating a known rule? And the answer to the question is that workers' comp, the policies behind it over the years, really are trying to encourage employers to make the workplace safe. And they want to encourage employers to enforce their rules so that if someone is not wearing their mask or walking on the wrong side of the line or doing something that's dangerous, that they will discipline their employees or not have the employees work there anymore if, in fact, they're violating the rules. So the burden is sort of on the employer to enforce the rules, and you're not going to be punished if you don't follow the rules. Now, of course, I'm not telling people not to follow rules because obviously you could be fired for not following the rules, but that's the answer to the question. Let's go to George. Hi, George. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show on WGN.
Hey, Karen. How are you doing?
Good. What's your legal question?
Okay, so this is kind of a weird, not really weird, but I'm not sure what to do. So we were leaving business, and the exit they have is very kind of a janky little weird little exit door, but it's where you have to exit. And when you step out onto the concrete outside, there's a clear 7-inch drop. I mean, it's kind of awkward. You got to step over a little thing. There's no sign, nothing. I mean, I know people who have fallen before. My grandmother fell out; she broke her wrist. And you know, she went to the hospital, got it treated. So I mean, where does that leave us? I'm not looking to, you know, take a lot of money out of the place, but just to cover the medical bills, how does that look on our, for our kids?
George, I must have missed this, but was this a restaurant where?
It was an indoor like soccer arena. Like,
oh, okay.
Game for,
okay. All right. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Generally speaking, if you are going to a restaurant or a public place like that, the owner has a duty to make sure that you are safe from known risks. Okay. So the question is, I'm going to put you on hold, George, just because there's some
little
noise here. Just because you have all these people coming to these events, a 7-inch drop, and I'm kind of doing the measurement here, that's a significant drop. And if there was no good lighting or if there was no colored tape or anything to warn you about that drop, and you had people, and maybe elderly, maybe young people, that could cause a problem. That could be deemed to be something that's unreasonably dangerous for a patron, in which case you could bring a law lawsuit and get not only the cost of the medical bills for your grandmother, but pain and suffering, any permanent damage, meaning maybe arthritis and those types of things, to compensate. It's interesting because a lot of these places will have insurance that it's called medical payments coverage, which means you don't have to prove they were negligent, but their insurance will pay for the medical bills in the event there's such an accident without actually having to go to court, actually having to prove the negligence. So there's several different ways to do this. You can either write the letter to the entity and say, this is what happened, here are the bills, and try to do it yourself. But I would think you might want to hire a lawyer in this case because your grandmother's older. We don't know how permanent this damage is going to be, meaning could she might be fine for now, but maybe she needs an operation later. And again, even though you're not looking to make $1 million on this, you want to make sure she's taken care of and that she gets the compensation that she's entitled to. So if you need a lawyer, give me an email or a call and I can refer you to someone in the county. It probably will be a lawyer in the county where the accident occurred. 312-332-7800 or WGN@AskKarenConti.com. We're going to take a break now. I'm going to still take your legal questions. And then we're going to do something fun. We're going to talk about pet peeves. We're going to talk about our pet peeves. I have some pet peeves, and my husband Jerry sitting across from me, he has some pet peeves, and we're going to talk about them, and I want to hear about your pet peeves. 312-981-7200. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show on WGN. Welcome back. A little segment that I like to do is called Presumed Ignorant, and this is a really good one. A Florida woman. Why Florida? A Florida woman was a passenger in a car, and she was apparently swerving. The driver was swerving. So the police stopped the car and smelled marijuana. Well, a search ensued, and the police found in her purse two bags. One bag had some marijuana, and the second bag had some cocaine. And apparently she said to the police officer, yeah, I admit that's the marijuana, that's mine, but I don't know anything about the cocaine. It's a windy day. It must have flown in the window and into my purse.
No.
Yeah.
No. I'm like, I've never held a bag of cocaine, but I understand that it has some heft to it.
Well, I would know it if you shoved up my nose. That's so bad. I call that the Windy City defense, right?
Ooh, I like that.
Everyone in Chicago, you got drugs in your car, you got drugs in your purse. Yeah. The wind blew it in.
Yeah,
I love
no
it.
Idea how it got here.
I don't know. All right, so now what we're going to do, we're going to shake it up a little bit here on the Karen Conti Show. Well, normally we're doing legal calls, but those are kind of waning. And so what we're going to talk about is pet peeves. And I think that sometimes it's good to vent on petty things. And it's not just big things, but little things that drive you absolutely crazy during your week. What are those things? I'd like to hear from you. What are your pet peeves that just bother you and you want to just get it off your chest now and you want to tell the world to stop doing the following, okay? Give us a call, 312-981-7200, or text to that number, 312-981-7200. Now, I'm going to talk about mine. And these are really petty. I mean, I admit that they are super petty. Giving out change. Does anybody get bothered when someone gives you the dollars first and then puts the change on top of the dollars and they fall all over the place? No, no, no. You give them the change first and then you give the dollars back, right?
Yes.
So you're in the McDonald's drive-thru and they do that and they mm-hmm. throw it right on your...
Every
drive-thru. Falls down. I don't yeah. know why they do that.
And then, of course, what's even worse is now you have this the dollars or the paper money, and you're trying to keep the coins from falling out. You're trying to pull that in and do something with it while they're shoving your bag of food at you.
It's just awful. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, there are worse things in life, but
when you're getting your food and in a hurry,
because there's two things that you do in your job. You give me my food and mm-hmm. you give change. So yeah. do one of them right. Just do it right.
Do one of them right.
No, I really think, though, like back in the day when I used to work fast food, and this was like a million years ago, you didn't always have a computer telling you. You had a cash register, so someone gave you a five, and it was $4.25. You'd take the change out, and then you'd have to count, you know, it's 75 cents, and then you put the dollar bills next. So that was the way you sort of calculated it in your head. So maybe that's now different when the cash register says, give the person $2.25 back. They do the two first and then the 25 cents.
Yeah, I don't know. I want the old days back.
I do, too. Roger, I assume you have a pet peeve.
Drivers.
Drivers? Drivers doing what?
Violating the law.
And anything in particular?
Just a myriad. I mean, pick any day out on the road. Somebody blowing through a residential stop sign at about 40 miles an hour. A car on the outer drive doing about 50, 60 right past a police officer who's on one of those hills.
Why were you doing all this, Roger?
I was not doing all those.
Do I have to represent you again in traffic court? Do I have to?
You're on retainer. What do you want?
Exercise my spectacular legal skills.
Oh God! Well, I don't want to do those things. I'm not upset about those people doing those things because I wish that was me. I don't wish that was me.
Well, they're just endangering the whole world.
They are, especially the one on the outer drive today, for example. Though every day I could find reasons, but this one then, as he zoomed past several cars on the left-hand lane, then cut across all the rest of the lanes to get to the exit.
That's bad. That's really bad. I'm gonna have Jerry weigh in. Jerry, what you've got pet peeves? I know you talk about them all day. You're a big pet peeve talker.
I can do my own 6-hour show. But then again, I'm a grumpy old man. But Roger, having to do with traffic, when I'm on the expressway or the tollway, and I'm in the fast lane trying to speed as much as possible, there's always some clown in front of me who's going to go 60 miles an hour and won't move over.
Just move over.
Yeah. Just move over.
It's so dangerous when I tear around him at 80 that, you know, I become a menace and it's all his fault. It's never my fault.
Of course it is. But you know why he's staying in the lane? It took him so much effort to get over there. He's not going to move over until he absolutely needs to.
Well, but I do have to say, Jerry, that the solution to this problem is not to tail the person and try to punish him for doing
and
this.
And honk my horn.
That is
and flash my lights.
Really dangerous.
Just you gently tap the rear bumper. Just a tap.
Just a little of bumper cars. No one ever died from bumper cars, did they?
Oh, no.
But see, I have pet peeves that are so much more petty or less important. I mean, okay, this is weird. Did you... Towels, right? Towels.
Okay.
I hate tags on towels. Yes. I hate tags on sheets. I hate, I rip them off as soon as I get them. But some people like to leave their tags on. So you go and you wash your hands and you got a tag on the towels. Why does that bother me so much?
You know why the tags bother me? When I'm trying to fold the towels after the laundry.
Yeah.
It's like that corner is too stiff and it won't. Okay.
Yeah.
Enough with the petty.
Okay. Jerry? I know you have a list over there.
Oh, man, my list is like 4 feet long. I'm going to have to take a pill. You know, fortunately, we're in a lot of nice restaurants or bars, and we meet people because we're pretty gregarious. Braggarts. We meet strangers who want to tell us that they drive a Rolls Royce, they make $1 billion a year, they own 27 homes, and all we are thinking while they're saying these things is, what a jerk you are. I just don't understand that.
Well, and it just seems to me that when someone gets a certain age, it's sort of like, if you really have to tell people that you went to Harvard or Notre Dame or wherever you went, it's probably not impressive anymore, right? You know? I don't know.
Here's what I think. They're bragging because they think they should be better off than they are, and they're hoping that by impressing you, they will elevate themselves above wherever you are and make themselves for a moment feel better.
Yeah.
But that's probably why they're bragging. They're probably very dissatisfied.
Well, yeah. I think all braggers are a little bit insecure. Because why would you have to tell somebody who you are?
If
someone asks me what I do or how I do it or whatever, I'm proud to say.
But you don't pull out your resume and show them
P&L
10-page long resume.
What I think is funny is, and someone said this to me, and it's so true, the minute that you really have something good and important to put on your resume is the day that you don't need a resume.
Yeah.
You know, but right. it's kind of true. Yeah. Let's go. I think we have Norma who's going to tell us about her pet peeve. Hi, Norma. What is your pet peeve? Unburden yourself.
Oh, my goodness sakes. I talk to myself about this all the time. Hi, Karen, it's good to talk to you. People who are late, I'm okay. I'll give you a 10-minute window either way. Or people who do, you know, you make a commitment. I'm going to come. I'm legally blind, and it especially hits me. Maybe I'm oversensitive, but it's like, I'm going to come over and trim your bushes on Saturday, and then they don't show up, you know, and they don't call you to let you know why they didn't, or maybe I'm busy, or I'm coming to pick you up at 10 o'clock, you know, and they show up at, like, 10 to 11, 11 o'clock, and they can't bother to call and say, I'm running behind.
Totally agree with you. And, you know, not that I'm always on time, because as a lawyer, we're always running behind because the court appearance that's supposed to be at 10 really now is at 10:45, and then my court appearance at 11 I'm going to be late for.
Right.
But if when it's in my power, I really do try to be on time, and I actually get more upset being late than for people being late, because I don't like inconveniencing people. That kind of spells out to me, I'm more important than you, and my time is more important than yours, which is really a bad message.
Thank you. That's exactly the control. It's like, oh, well, you know, it kind of goes along with my secondary pet peeve is that word we have nowadays, whatever.
Whatever.
It's like, you know, whatever.
It means wait, nothing.
You know, you don't mean anything worse than, you know, just, you feel that total lack of respect. And I'm sorry, I'm getting angry just talking about it.
But I think it's cathartic. Thank you, Norma. Thank you for calling the show. When you come back, we're going to talk more about pet peeves. I know you have them. So now this is your chance to unload them on the air and tell everybody about your pet peeves. 312-981-7200. You're listening to The Karen Conti Show. We are talking pet peeves. Now's your time to tell us your pet peeves. And I'm going to go to Danny. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show. What is your pet peeve?
Hey, guys. You know, I have a restaurant in Skokie, and this happens to me all the time. And I'll get a phone call, and they go, I have a big order. I go, what would you like? And they go, hey, guys, what do you want? Expecting you to wait and to each person. And this drives me crazy.
So taking a long...
Say, like tonight, I say, do me a favor, call me back. And I'll hang up the phone.
So they take time. They go, I want this, like that kind of thing.
Okay, Bobby, what do you want? What do you want on it? And it you know, a minute order will take 15 minutes. We're busy. I don't have time for that.
But that's
my biggest pet peeve.
And patience.
It should be only my biggest pet peeve.
Yeah. Well, you got people calling your restaurant. It sounds like you're doing well and you're busy. So I guess that's kind of a good thing.
Well, 42 years in business, we're successful, but. I get to pick and choose.
It's a hard business to be in. Thanks for your pet peeve, Danny. Take care.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Let's go to Bruce. Bruce, do you have a pet peeve for me?
Yes. Karen Conti.
Yes, it's Karen Conti.
I love your show. I never call in.
Great.
Thank you for taking my my pet peeve is box store, any grocery store that's out in the Chicago suburbs. My pet peeve is people who enter the exits and exit through the enter.
That may have happened to me this weekend at a big box store where my husband dropped me off in the exit and said, you can go through the exit. They'll let you through.
I love the exit.
I couldn't get through. So why does that bother you so much? Just not following the rules?
Well, it's a lot of times if I'm with my, I have a 5-year-old daughter, if I'm with her and I already have the cart and I'm trying to walk through the entrance and people are walking towards me with their cart and you can't get in. And you're like, what are you doing? The exit's over there.
Thank you for the call, Bruce. And I'm going to tell you another of my pet peeves that's totally related to that. Okay, you're going through a revolving door, and you're behind a person who's going through the revolving door and they get to the other side and they stop right there. So that when you go around, you run right into them. Same with escalators. Where they go all the way down and then they decide to stop and look around and you just run right into them.
Or how about stores where somebody gets in through the door just inside the store.
Yes.
And stops there because they have no clue where they're going. They want to look around, see if they recognize anyone. They want to get used to the light, whatever the reason. But they stop right inside the door. Can you?
No sense of spatial, you know, spatial, whatever you want to call it.
I tend to think that, and I'm guilty as much as anyone else of this at times. I tend to think that some people just enter a certain time warp of their own.
Right. Yeah.
At certain times of the day or night. It's not a consistent thing, and it's not done selfishly.
No.
It's we just kind of, our brain just snaps shut for a few seconds.
And sensory overload, maybe, when
exactly.
they're in the store.
They
That's just don't
true.
Know where to go and what to do. And
unlike people like me who know exactly how I'm going to get from point A to point Z.
Well, aren't you perfect, Roger?
Maybe.
Okay, now, Jerry, do you have more? Do you have more pet peeves?
I know you do. Pet peeves.
He pulls this list out.
I need a week show.
Okay.
You know my friends out there on Radio Land. People always say, "Why doesn't your wife let you talk more on the show?"
Is that a pet peeve?
No, it's not a pet peeve. Karen lets me talk the entire show. She just refuses to turn my microphone. That's not a pet peeve, darling.
Okay.
I love you.
Okay.
Now, my biggest pet peeve is there's a certain age group of people who start every sentence with "so." What did you do yesterday? So. I took my cat to the dentist. It was awesome. But worse than that, it's called upspeak. Young people, mostly young people, who say, "This is my boyfriend, Taylor. He lives in Chicago. He's awesome. I would, young people out there, I will never give you a job working for me or representing me until you
well,
can speak like
a normal
person."
Well, you know, it's interesting because I teach at law school, and I find that a lot of my students, especially the women, and I don't know, it's not always, but mostly the women who do that, and it so detracts from your authority. So instead of saying, "Judge, I'm presenting this motion for summary judgment," "Judge, I'm presenting this motion for summary judgment," and it's almost like they're asking you to approve of what they're saying, which is not what you want to do. That conveys a really bad message, which is, "I'm not quite sure."
Yeah, one of your students came up to me and said, "Hi, I'm Jennifer." And I said, "Are you sure?"
Is that a question or a comment? Okay, Siobhan, I hope I'm saying that name right because that's such a beautiful Irish name.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Hi.
What's your pet peeve?
I never called your show before. I didn't know you had one. I only heard you with Brian.
Oh, well, welcome.
My pet peeve is bus drivers that do not know the streets. I've been riding the bus for about 60 years, and we had singing bus drivers with poems. They would say all the streets with rhymes. I had one bus driver 3 months after brain surgery. He let me off at the front door of the high school.
Oh, my gosh. And you're a little past high school, but you know, you probably look good. You know, what is it that George Carlin says? You know what? These bus drivers, they demand exact change. If they demand exact change, they better drive me exactly to where I want to go.
Well, I'm with a walker, so I get on the bus and I say, "Would you please let me off at, say, Cicero?" And they'll say, "Well, you'll have to let me know where that is, or St. Louis, or, you know, any off street."
Thank you for the call, Siobhan. I hope that unburdened you. I know this is, again, pretty petty, but when you're at a restaurant and you're eating your food, and I'm not the fastest eater, nor am I the slowest eater, but I've got a full plate of food, and the waitress comes over, or the waitstaff comes over and says, "Oh, are you done? Can I take that plate?" "No, you can't take it. I'm still eating. Do I look like I'm done?" You know, that's a very dangerous place. The most dangerous place in a restaurant is between me and my food. So
that's
don't
for sure.
go there. Yeah. Okay, Dan, you've been really quiet
Dan
back
the
there. Dan, the producer, he looks like he's like just stirring up
he's
some emotion
up.
Back
he's
here. Dan?
Yeah, well, I was, you guys took my traffic ones already. And that's both sides. I mean, in hockey, they call it ice vision, you know, but when you're on the expressway, have some idea of the other things that are going around you, you know, the common speed law. You know, I don't want to, first of all, stay out of the left lane if you're going slow, but if traffic is stacked up, kind of, don't tailgate me because I can't go anywhere either.
Right.
Do the zipper merge. Simple stuff. Signal your stuff. Like, simple little traffic things like that, I think, is probably my top one.
Now, I have one, and that is cell phones in general. But specifically, have you ever been somewhere like maybe sitting on a bus or maybe at a health club? You know, for me, like going to the fitness center or going to a health club is I'm trying to relax. I'm trying to exercise, but I'm also trying to kind of zone out, maybe, you know, do some cardio. And I got someone next to me yelling on the phone their shopping list or what they're going to do tomorrow, or and it's just annoying because I can't help but get drawn into an inane conversation that I don't want to be involved in, and I really want to be just kind of left alone. Does anyone get bothered by that? No? Jerry, I'm sure you have any more. So you got some more. Roger, I know you've got some more up there.
You know, Jerry ran out of paper. I got the rest up here.
How about when you're walking down the sidewalk, right? And people won't move over. They just, and sometimes they just want to run into them just for fun. I mean, I don't do that because that would be rude. But
well,
I mean,
I wouldn't
want
to break
over
up a sweet couple holding hands,
no,
talking
that
to each other.
I'm talking about a crowd of people. And like when I was young, my mother would always say, "Move over,
yeah,
move over," so you'd be polite and don't make them walk on the grass. I mean, that's just not, that's rude.
Well, how about the one who walks down the sidewalk in the middle of the sidewalk, daring you to try to pick a side before they do? And then you do this dance back and forth.
Are we feeling better? Having
I feel a lot better.
I know. I feel a
I'm
lot
I'm just
better.
Getting started. Sorry.
You know what I do? When I see somebody walking down the street and they're completely dressed head to toe in camouflage, I crash right into them. That way they know the camouflage is working.
On that low note, you're listening to the Karen Conti Show. If you have a legal question that you want to ask me privately, 312-332-7800, or email me at WGN at AskKarenConti.com. You're listening to WGN.